Here I am in Salmonarm, all the way from Blind Bay, and you're listening to What So What, and I am your host, Jerry Paquette, co-author of the book Eat to Save Your Life, and director of education with the ShoeSwap Food Action Co-op, and program manager for the Elder Abuse Awareness Program. What So What provides discussions about food, the people who grow and distribute it, and its links to our health and well-being. And once a month, What So What focuses on issues related to elder abuse and, where appropriate, the links between elder abuse and nutrition. A few weeks ago, I began a discussion on cholesterol, statins, fat, vitamin D, and sulfates. I intended to pursue this discussion in a controlled, relaxed, and sequential manner over the month. However, the world outside just wouldn't shut down and make way for my intentions, and we focused instead on a discussion with Ms. Romana Fry and Mr. Ron Boer concerning Interior Health's Community Food Action Initiative. I'm going to say that again. Interior Health's Community Food Action Initiative, the intention of which is to support local governments within the Interior Health region to develop and or implement a food security plan or strategy. I think you agree that was and is important, even essential. And I will keep you informed over the next few weeks about how that rather important initiative is proceeding here in the ShoeSwap. And here's a peek. The ShoeSwap Food Action Co-op is participating this coming Thursday in a presentation to CSRD about food security in our community, and I will report on that next week, I promise. You recall, I hope, that I gave you a reading assignment to make up for the missing discussion on fats and cholesterol in our bodies. Aha, I can hear you scrambling. I sent you to my nutrition website, eattosaveyourlife.com, and asked you to click on the Proteins, Carbs, and Fats tab and to read my blog on cholesterol. Well, I may be idealistic, but I'm not stupid. I know you did not do that. For the rest of you, I am feeling rather generous today, so we'll bring you up to speed on what you missed about good fat and good cholesterol by ignoring me. I do that because I'm determined to help you learn how to take charge of your own health through excellent food choices. Around the 4:30-ish mark, I'm going to bring you up to speed on what is happening right here in the ShoeSwap about elder abuse awareness, because a considerable amount indeed is happening. In particular, I'm going to invite you to what I know is going to be a marvelous opportunity for you and yours to get your voices heard about abuse and what to do about it. So stay tuned. Get ready to call in with questions and comments by phoning 250-463-5026. Here it is again. This will be the fourth time. 463-5026. And please give some thought to joining the Elder Abuse Awareness Program by emailing your decision to elderabuseawareness@gmail.com. Elder Abuse Awareness, all one word. You're listening to What So What with me, Jerry Paquette, and my twin topics today involve busting fat and cholesterol myths on the one hand, and exploring the collective benefits of enhancing everyone's awareness about elder abuse in the ShoeSwap. Now, listen, as I was coming in, it was gray and it was snowy and slippery and people were doing silly things on the highway, but they didn't distract me from the sign I saw at a boating outlet on the way in. It said, "Season's over, big sale, all clothing off." Well, I got a kick out of that last little bit, so I invite all of us now to join in the fun, celebrate the exclamation marks on the sign, and just celebrate that the season's over, all clothing off. So take a minute, take it off, get into the mood. Dan's going for it. Yeah, there he is. Now, if the rest of you, if you want to phone in, I just ask you that you put your clothes back on. I don't want to hear your teeth chattering over the air. All right, we'll get on to serious things now. You're listening to What So What with Jerry Paquette on CKVS 93.7 FM. Today, we're talking about fat and cholesterol, and then shifting to upcoming events in Immigration Service ShoeSwap's Elder Abuse Awareness Program. Should you be inspired to join in the discussion with questions, queries, or alternative views, please, please, please call in at 250-463-5026. That number for the, I think it's the sixth time, 463-5026. First, let's talk about fat and cholesterol. I advise you to just sit back and listen. We'll be dealing with this again next week when you'll want pen and paper handy. For now, just get the concepts and we'll worry about the details later. Well, you're going to get some details now, but there'll be no test until later. I'm going to read sections of my website, eattosaveyourlife.com, the ones that I asked you to read, and I know you did not. But I'm going to do it for you, so just sit back and feel like a prince or a princess, and you'll be read to, or maybe a child, whatever role makes you comfortable. So let's first of all remind ourselves about the fact that there is not just fat, but there are various types of fat. And fat is not necessarily bad for you. In fact, the good fats are only bad for you when you've had too many of the darn things. So I want to establish that first of all, and then take you through the types of fats that do exist and warn you about some of them and then free you up to enjoy more fat maybe than you are now. Depends on your present habits, of course. Chapter 6 of my book, Eat to Save Your Life, was frankly the most difficult chapter to research and write. We named it Baffled by Fats because of the nutritional information that was so considerably influenced by economics and politics and governments and media fear-mongering, we struggled to find information to confidently share with our readers. Now, I don't remember how many pages we wrote on fats, chapter 6, but I remember having several binders full of research materials, documents that I printed out, read, followed up on, checked out the researchers, made sure that they weren't a member of a corporation or being paid by them to celebrate their kinds of oils and so on. Anyway, we ended up with such a bundle of stuff, distilling it down became a real difficulty for us. And I still have that binder full, and I could probably triple or quadruple or even more the amount of material I've got in that binder because so much is going on about fat. Some of it you can depend upon, some of it you cannot. And that's why I'm interested in your getting the concepts down. What we found may be a little unexpected and may even contradict some common myths about fat, and if it does that, well, I'm happy. Perhaps most surprising to many people is that the best research from credible sources shows that saturated fat, such as butter, lard, and coconut oil, are not as harmful as once thought, and they actually can be beneficial when eaten in moderate amounts. And I think that's true of any decent food, don't you? Eat it in moderate amounts. But that's another matter. You see, your body uses saturated fats for cushioning and lubrication. Do you remember what a saturated fat is? If you think of a pencil and then put some needles along its length on either side and all around it, and imagine that there's little round attachments on the ends of those needles, those would be carbon atoms, and the pencil would be the skeleton of the collection of those atoms that would include hydrogen. Now, that pencil is very, very rigid, and that's what a saturated fat is. It's built very much like that, if you can envision what I just described. That's what a saturated fat is like, and it's good stuff. It bends a little bit. It's not as rigid as a pencil, but relative to other kinds of fat, it is. And its usefulness is in, well, a number of things, but primarily because of its rigidity, it's useful for cushioning, protecting one surface of the bone from another surface of a bone. It's important in your knees and your hips and all of your joints. It does other things too, but we'll talk about those another time. Saturated fats are good. You just don't need an awful lot of them. Saturated fat, then, is used for cushioning and lubrication because it's slippery. You know, fat is slippery. It's got an oily surface to it. In addition, some fats, such as coconut oil, are made up of what are called medium chain fatty acids. Some saturated fats are very, very long, and they are the real brutes. And some others have a shorter pencil skeleton, if you want, or spine. And they behave differently than the very, very long ones and the very fat ones. They do different things. And they are very highly accessible to your cells. That is, the cells in your body will let in those medium-chain fatty acids where they won't let in the longer-chain fatty acids. Your cells, the skins on the outside of them, the cell surface, knows the difference and invites the medium-chain fatty acids to come inside where they are broken down and used for all manners of things, and there's no replacement for them. You need them. Research shows that they can benefit digestive, endocrine, and immune systems, and may even help protect against cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and many degenerative diseases. One of the medium-chain fatty acids, of course, I think I've mentioned this before, is coconut oil or coconut fat. We call the fat oil only because it's liquidy. Coconut fat becomes coconut oil when it just sits around at room temperature. It doesn't need to be refrigerated, though. I'm talking about room temperature, maybe slightly too warm a room temperature in the summer, for example. But normally, sitting in your cupboard, not in the fridge, the coconut fat continues to be fairly solid and looks like fat. Conversely, the refined vegetable oils often recommended in place of saturated fats can actually interfere with your cells, as opposed to the medium-chain fats, which help your cells. And they can foster disease. The problem with refined vegetable oils is that they are easily damaged by heat, by light, and by air. And when that happens, they are oxidized, or they become rancid. And rancid fats create huge problems for the body as they release damaging free radicals that wreak havoc at the cellular level. Rancid, oxidizing, all that means is an atom along the length of the molecule has been stripped off, making it available to other things that are not very desirable. They are now rancid, and they become dangerous in your body because of what they can attract. When it comes to fat, don't believe all the fat-free hype you hear, complete with drum rolls and dancing models on commercials. The fat-free hoopla often is about marketing, not about health, or it's simply old information that new research has proven to be incorrect. Instead, follow these tips for including beneficial fats and oils in your diet while avoiding the harmful ones. Bullet number one, eliminate fats and oils that may have oxidized or turned rancid during refining or through improper storage or handling that has exposed them to too much heat, light, or air. Remember that. Heat, light, and air. That is, don't leave your oils. There are good light oils that are liquidy for you to use and use in particular ways, but don't leave them out in the light in a clear bottle. In fact, don't buy them in a clear bottle at all. They should be in a dark bottle. But don't leave them out on the shelf next to the coconut oil. The coconut oil or coconut fat can sit on the shelf outside your fridge. The other oils must not, with one exception, maybe. You can make a decision about that yourself. I'll tell you in a minute. Well, eliminate fats and oils that have oxidized during refining or through improper storage or handling that has exposed them to too much heat, light, and air. Those clear bottles of vegetable oil sitting on the grocery store shelves, forget them. Do not buy them. Do not take them home. Light shines right through the bottles and the oils are on their way to oxidation right there under the store lights. Choose cold-pressed vegetable oils in dark bottles that protect against light, and make sure to store these oils in the fridge and use them quickly so they don't turn rancid. If you've had a bottle of oil, I don't care whether it's in the fridge or not, and it's a light, very, very liquidy fluid, and it's been there for months and months and months, consider getting rid of it. Buy smaller bottles in the future and use them up quickly, because they will eventually turn rancid. Cold-pressed simply means, well, let's pick olives, for example. You take an olive off its bush and you press it. You squeeze it until the oil comes out of it. You don't apply heat. You don't apply anything but mechanical devices, perhaps, to them. There may be other ways of squeezing them, I'm not sure. But you're not applying anything that will turn its oil rancid. So again, choose cold-pressed vegetable oils in dark bottles that protect against light, and make sure to store them in the fridge if they're a very light oil, or if they're olive oil, you can stir them or store them in a dark cupboard. But again, don't let it sit there for long, long periods of time. Buy smaller bottles and use it fairly quickly. Eliminate trans fats completely. I don't know if you know what a trans fat is. I don't think it's terribly complicated a process. The manufacturers of these trans fats, they invented the trans fat because they wanted to sell their oils, their liquidy oils that they knew would turn rancid fairly quickly. What they wanted to do, therefore, is convert them to a solid-looking fat so that they would not, in fact, oxidize. So what they did was they took the oil and they boiled it like mad with a catalyst. I think it was a nickel catalyst, it may be something else. And they heated it up terribly, terribly fast until one of the atoms on the molecule flipped over to the other side of the spine of the molecule. It went across from one side to the other, and that action of the atom flipping over or going across to the other side made it be called a trans fat, trans meaning across. And what happened was the liquidy molecule, the very bendy molecule that makes the thing, the collection of those kinds of molecules look liquidy, the very fact that one atom went over to the other side rendered the oil solid. And now it could be stored. Now you could buy it and use it like you used a solid fat. Except your body does not recognize it as a fat. It doesn't recognize it as anything but an alien substance. And so what does it do? Well, what does your body do when you stick an alien object in it, like getting a sliver or something? It fights it. It inflames the area where the fat is as it's fighting it, because there's a lot of action going on and you are in a state of inflammation. That's what trans fats do. And unfortunately, in spite of all the evidence and all the long period of time during which that evidence has been available, there are stores, restaurants, and other industrial complexes that use trans fats because it's cheap. You must check whether or not the products that you buy have trans fats in them. And that's not easy to do because they don't necessarily put that information on the labels. They ought to, because this is a very dangerous thing for our health. And with the research shows it. Do some homework yourself. Just Google trans fats and read whatever you've got an appetite for, and you'll find out what we found out. So you want to eliminate food supplements containing oxidized fats and liquids. Chapter 2 of our book, Eat to Save Your Life, discusses the problem of rancid oils turning up in supplements. Query manufacturers about how they make their food supplements and avoid brands that damage their oils with harsh refining practices. So you got to be careful on every front. Every time you buy something that's packaged, that's been pre-prepared for you in any way, and that's what supplements are about. And so there are good supplements and bad supplements. You have to worry, and you have to go in and check things out. How do you check it out? Well, you learn some things, and you use that knowledge to read and make questions happen. Mostly you want to go out to the garden or down to the mills and get the fresh vegetables and fresh fruits and make your own dinner. Don't buy packaged stuff as much as you can avoid it. So remember, I'm not going to go on with this too much longer because I want to get to the second half of the program today, but I want you to remember that fats can be good. Good fats are good for you. Eat them in moderate amounts. That's all you have to worry about. So just a few glossaries or terms for you. We talked about solid fats and oily fats. We've talked about trans fats. I want to mention essential fatty acids. And you'll hear that word from time to time, fatty acids, that phrase. It's just the technical term for fats. It says more than the word fat does, especially to the scientists who use them. For you, these are essential fats. Essential fats are not the same thing as simple fat, at least for scientists. They use the terms interchangeably and sometimes incorrectly to make our lives simpler. Technically, however, all fats are composed of fatty acids. There are many groups of fatty acids, and all these groups have subgroups. Your body produces some of them, such as omega-9, but cannot produce others. In the case of fatty acids that your body cannot produce, it's essential to get them from food, so they're called essential fatty acids. Our book features two groups of EFAs, essential fatty acids, that are particularly important, omega-3 and omega-6. So just remember that, because we're going to talk about those next week at some length. Essential fatty acids. We talked about saturated fats, and there's various kinds of saturated fats, including saturated fats that aren't so saturated. They have a space along their spine. They're called monounsaturated fats. And then there are polyunsaturated fats, and those have a lot of spaces along their spine missing, and that means they can bend a lot like a contortionist, and they're the very, very fluid fats that can be very easily turned rancid in light, heat, and air. Next week, we're going to be talking about the essential fatty acids, because they're a story unto themselves. Right now, let me remind you all that you are listening to What So What with Jerry Paquette on CKVS 93.7 FM. And today we're talking about fat, and in a moment a bit about cholesterol, and then I'm shifting to upcoming events in Immigration Service Shoe Swap's Elder Abuse Awareness Program. So let's move over, shall we, now for a minute. I'm not going to take too much time today on cholesterol because I want to dwell on that next week. So here's the basic concepts for you. I went to my doctor last week for my medical checkup. He had taken blood and urine, and he was going to inform me from analysis of all of that whether or not I was alive and well. Well, I knew I was alive, and when I left his office, I knew I was well. Now, he did something that an awful lot of other doctors have never done when I went to visit them. He looked at my cholesterol count, and it was pretty good. It was a little higher than normal, but not very high. And my doctor sat down with me, and he said, "You know, I want to explain a bit about cholesterol." He said, "It's not the most important thing that one can have a little bit high. Yours is not high, Jerry, but it's pushing the limits." But he said, "I'm not worried about it because the rest of your health is so good." And we had a nice talk about cholesterol. In the past, if your cholesterol was high, I don't think you could find a doctor anywhere who would be fairly positive about that like mine was. No, mine was not high. It was higher. It was at the top of the scale. He wasn't worried about it. And he talked about other things that can go wrong in the body, and I was really pleased to find what I hope is a trend among doctors to get away from what they're told in classes, I suspect, and particularly by industry and the pill makers about cholesterol and how bad it is. So let me talk a little bit about that. I'm going to turn now to my blog. It's called Confusion, Not Cholesterol May Be Our Enemy, Part 1. And I'm going to read a bit from it for you. It's on my website, eattosaveyourlife.com, and you just hit the blog tab, type in the word cholesterol, and you will find at least three articles on it. So let me read a little bit to you. And here's the concepts I think most of us have as we wend our way through lives, and particularly when we go to see our doctor. Most people we talk with about health and nutrition issues tell us they know this about cholesterol. Bullet. High cholesterol can cause heart attacks. Bullet. Everyone should reduce the amount of cholesterol they eat. Bullet. There is a bad form and a good form of cholesterol, and it's the bad cholesterol that causes heart attacks. Bullet. LDL is bad cholesterol. HDL is the good form. To get rid of LDL, you need to be on statins, like Crestor or Liptor. Bullet. Statins will protect you against having a heart attack. End of the bullets. Do you tend to agree with all of those? Have you heard them before? Have those been thoughts wandering through your mind? Chances are you have nodded your head throughout the entire list, and for good reasons. Science and medical authorities, the media, families, and friends have long accepted cholesterol as a health threat, and since 1986, statins as the means to mitigate that threat. Consider the following quotation from the prestigious Howard Hughes Medical Institute in their September 2012 bulletin. Now, Howard Hughes is a very significant medical institute, and so it has credibility in the minds of an awful lot of people, and I think by and large for very good reasons. But here's what they say about cholesterol. After nearly 100 years of exploration, we now have four lines of persuasive evidence: experimental, genetic, epidemiologic, and therapeutic, that implicate the cholesterol-carrying LDL particle as the primary cause of atherosclerosis. Very few, if any, chronic diseases of adults have ever been subjected to such intensive research, and in very few, if any, chronic diseases of adults has the cause been so convincingly demonstrated in so many ways. Unquote. Now that seems to put the case of cholesterol to rest. It's a pretty impressive, conclusive statement, and it should inspire confidence that the correct medical remedy is one that sets out to reduce LDL cholesterol. If I were a doctor and I was reading that and you came in and had high cholesterol, I'd have you on a statin pretty darn quickly, at least in years prior. But the Howard Hughes Medical Institute is not without its doubters, including scientists and medical people who are becoming increasingly vocal and whose statements seem as credible as the Howard Hughes Medical Institute's. Consider the work of Dr. Stephanie Seneff, a researcher with MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and her team. She disputes previous conclusions that cholesterol is a heart threat, and she does it with the same measure of confidence we find in the HHMI bulletin quoted above. Here is one of her research conclusions published in her online article. You can go read it. It's called How Statins Really Work Explains Why They Don't Really Work. Here's a quote from her article. My research has uncovered compelling evidence that the nutrient that is most crucially needed to protect the heart from atherosclerosis is cholesterol sulfate. Cholesterol sulfate. Unquote. Seneff's ongoing re-evaluation of cholesterol significantly challenges widespread views on the role of cholesterol and statins. Her work points instead to a lack of dietary sulfur combined with excessive amounts of sugars, especially fructose, as the cause of atherosclerosis. More than that, Dr. Seneff argues that statins are in fact causing much of the damage that they are intended to prevent, as they block the production of LDL, that is, that so-called bad cholesterol. In fact, she and her team are very clear that they believe more cholesterol, not less, is what people need. Yow. Well, I'm going to leave my discussion about cholesterol there for today, and I'm going to come back to it when I talk about essential fatty acids. Next week, I'm going to introduce some very detailed considerations of LDL, and I want you to be ready for that, and I want you to be prepared to take what you learn from me and that you confirm by doing some research on your own. I hope you'll do that. I wanted you to take that information that you acquire to your doctor and ask him about it. I think we need to be doing that with our doctors, not as a challenge so much as giving them an awareness that we're reading. We're starting to know what scientists know. It's starting to become available and more transparent, and we now know it. So we have some new questions about diagnoses and pills that we're asked to take. All right, so that's for next week. We're going to be talking more about cholesterol, and we're going to be talking about essential fatty acids. Let's shift ground, and I wish I had a little orchestra here to bring me to a different point of mood and tone, because now we're going to be talking about what I consider the dark matter here in the shoe swap, and that is elder abuse. So let me remind you for a moment that this show is made available by DeMille's. Some 45 years ago, Roger DeMille arrived from California with his family to take up residence in Salmon Arm. Of course, he discovered what we all appreciate, an oasis filled with the promise of nature's bounty. Like so many of us, he moved his family here. They started a humble farming and marketing operation with a mere 10 rows of sweet corn, a small roadside stand, and an illegal sign. It was all a hit right off the mark. His family's second year saw expansion into 20 rows of corn and a small variety of vegetables, and the rest, well, if you've shopped at DeMille's, you know. Today, DeMille's offers a wide selection of fresh quality fruit and produce from their own farm. They also offer food and vegetables from other local farms, and they offer the exotics from farms around the world. DeMille's is open 7 days a week from sunrise to sunset and has been open since 1970. And thank you to DeMille's. All right, we're moving on then. We're going to be talking now about elder abuse awareness. And you know, it's not all dark news, although elder abuse is dark. There is no light in it. We have to shine a light on it. And that is why the Immigration Services Shoe Swap acquired a grant some time ago now and decided to focus some of its efforts on making us all aware of what elder abuse is all about right here in our own community. So kudos to them. So I want to talk to you, first of all, about a very positive thing that is happening. I've reported in the past few weeks on the community forum that we held on October the 26th. We got quite a number of people out and had presentations by Saskew Credit and who else? By the Deo Lutheran Church, by immigration, by a medical doctor, Dr. Warren Bell. And we listened to a woman speak from Eastern Canada on the nature of elder abuse. And then the community forum participants engaged in dialogue, posed questions, we took notes, and we asked people there if they would volunteer to join us in yet another enterprise, and we got quite a swack of volunteers, and I want to talk to you a bit about what they're going to be doing. First of all, I want to put elder abuse in perspective. Not all of us know what it is. I've had, because I am the program manager for the Elder Abuse Awareness Program in the Shoe Swap, I've had occasion to speak to an awful lot of people in our area on the phone, in person, and through my readings. I was stunned to find out what I did not know, and I think I've mentioned it here, and I'll mention it again. I did not know that I was guilty of elder abuse. I don't even know how to put it. Let me tell you what it was, and you can judge. Because this is the Elder Abuse Awareness Program, awareness is our goal. We're not trying to resolve it at this point. That's going to take all of you to work together. Right now, a few of us are trying to make a lot of us aware. And in the process of doing that, I made myself aware. I live with my mother-in-law and my wife, and my mother-in-law has a suite in the garden. It's beautiful. She has walls and windows and all of that. We don't leave her out in the woods. But there she is in the garden suite downstairs. And we engage daily. And I was starting to read about particularly unintended elder abuse. And I thought, So I went downstairs and I said, "Hi, do I abuse you?" I just asked her straight out. She knew what I was doing, so I guess she was kind of ready for this. I said, do I abuse you? Do I exhibit abusive behavior towards you?" And she said, "Yes." Well, that stopped the conversation for a moment because I expected her to say, "Oh, no, not you. You're a sweet human being and you're gentle and caring and at all times focused on my welfare and cheering me up and putting on a good face." But she didn't say that. She said, "Yes." And I was, frankly, taken aback. She went on quickly, though, because she's a good sort and wasn't going to leave me in silence. And she said, "Sometimes, well, a lot of times you use sarcasm when we talk together." And I immediately recognized that she was right. I do. It's a form of humor. And so it became a part of my joking with her. And I suppose dealing with things that maybe were annoying to me or troubling to me or confusing to me, I would resort to sarcasm. And a sarcasm is not a good form of humor. And nobody should convince you that it is. And I knew that. I knew that, but I still used it for all sorts of reasons that I still have to plumb the depths of. And she admitted to using sarcasm too, I think in defense. And so we talked about that, and I said, "Well, I'm not going to do that anymore. And I don't believe I have. I'm going to have to ask for an update, but I don't believe I have. I think becoming aware changed something of my behavior almost immediately as soon as I articulated it." And she had the strength and the wherefore, and I suppose the confidence, to say, "Yes, you use sarcasm. And I think I do too sometimes." Because that put her into a defensive position. So we were creating a kind of low dose poison in our household that my wife recognized. She said to me later when we talked about this, she said, "Sometimes when the two of you started in your little sarcastic battles around the dinner table, I would leave the room, and that's why I left the room." So I find that, for me, a very powerful example of what elder abuse is all about, and particularly unwitting elder abuse. It is poisonous. It is toxic. And a lot of us probably do something like that. But there are other kinds of abuse, and I want to make sure that you are aware of that. So let me go through some of them for a minute, and then I'm going to invite you to something. And I'm going to give you a list, and I know it's not complete because I've been meeting with small groups and larger groups of people, and they always come up with a variation on one of these items in the list, and sometimes that means we add to the list. But here's a basic list of forms of abuse for which an awful lot of us in this community are guilty, I'm afraid. The first form, the most obvious one perhaps, maybe not the most obvious one, but very obvious, is physical abuse. It's physical abuse if somebody hits an older adult or handles the person roughly, even if there is no injury. And I'm thinking here of an image I have at home of an elder person's arm after she came back from the hospital. Her arm is one huge, massive bruise. And that means somebody handled her without care or without consideration for the condition of her body or her arm or her skin. But in any case, it's a form of abuse. And it probably came from an otherwise caring person, but somebody who maybe was in a hurry, maybe wasn't trained, maybe forgot his or her training, but it was abuse. And the pain was there for a long time for her. Giving a person too much or too little medication is another kind of physical abuse. Or physically restraining a person. There are also forms of physical abuse. And you're going to have probably for me other examples of physical abuse that I didn't mention there. And that matters for what I'm going to invite you to later. Then there's sexual abuse. The one that nobody likes to talk about, I suppose. It's sexual abuse if somebody forces an older adult to engage in sexual activity. That's it. This may include verbal or suggestive behavior, not respecting personal privacy, sexual touching, or sex without the person's consent. And again, I think we can go into the subtleties of that, but it all comes out as sexual abuse. And then there's emotional abuse. It is emotional abuse if somebody threatens, insults, intimidates, or humiliates an older adult, treats the person like a child, or does not allow them to see their family and friends. Emotional abuse can devastate a person's sense of identity, dignity, or self-worth. And I've got to say, that kind of disintegration of self-worth and identity and dignity almost always results for elder people in isolation and dependence. And then there's the one that seems to be the most popular. Everyone understands it's abuse. We've seen commercials on it on TV. I think they're maybe easier to make. I don't know. But financial abuse. It is financial abuse if somebody tricks, threatens, or persuades older adults out of their money, property, or possessions. Misusing a power of attorney is a common form of financial abuse. I talked to bankers here in Salmon Arm, and in every case, the person to whom I was speaking just acknowledged that right off the bat. Oh, yes, and they have stories to tell about it, if only I could get them to tell the stories. Financial abuse is probably, at least statistically, the most common forms of adult elder abuse. And then there's abuse that comes from the violation of rights and freedoms. Let's just call it that, violation of rights and freedoms abuse. It is a violation of rights and freedoms if somebody interferes with an older adult's ability to make choices, especially when those choices are protected under the law. I hesitated there for a moment because I wanted that to sit. I'm going to read it again. It's a violation of rights and freedoms if somebody interferes with an older adult's ability to make choices. I think there is probably, we can get into a philosophical discussion about this, there's nothing that makes us human more than the right and the ability to make choices. So imagine what it is like at a very fundamental level to suddenly be held back from being able to make choices. Give that some thought. Examples include interfering with spiritual practices or traditions, withholding mail or information, denying privacy, preventing visitors, dictating how someone else can spend their own money, or keeping someone in an institution without a legitimate reason. And I'm sure we can expand on that list. Then there is neglect, a form of abuse. It is neglect if somebody fails to provide the necessities of life, such as food, clothing, a safe shelter, medical attention, personal care, and necessary supervision. Neglect may be intentional or unintentional. In the unintentional, like my use of sarcasm, I suppose there was some intention there that was not as healthy as it should be, for sure. But I wasn't really aware of it. I wasn't, I am guilty of abuse. I'm not going to soften that any. But unintentional abuse may be one of the worst forms of abuse because the perpetrator doesn't know what's going on. So how do you stop it? Well, by being open, I guess. Sometimes the people providing care do not have the necessary knowledge, experience, or ability to provide that care. And therefore, the person's needs are neglected. And then there's one that people do like to talk about because there is politics involved here, and that's systemic abuse, also called institutional abuse. And that refers to rules, regulations, policies, or social practices that harm or discriminate against older adults. Systemic abuse includes rules that are developed for an apparently neutral purpose, but that hurt the person or persons. Examples include using physical restraints as an easy way to prevent falls. That becomes a part of the system, the part of the normal way of doing things. Or diapering a person instead of helping them to the washroom, simply to save time or effort. Sometimes staff shortages can lead to systemic neglect in care homes. But there's also governmental systemic abuse. And I'm sure if we sat down together, we could find stories about abuse at a systemic level in varieties of organizations and systems. Now here's one. This is interesting. I never hear anybody talk about this. Self-abuse or self-neglect. Sometimes adults harm themselves through self-neglect, that is, not eating, not going to the doctor for needed care, not exercising, compulsive hoarding, the use of alcohol or other forms of chemical abuse. One of the most difficult problems family members face is achieving a balance between respecting an older adult's autonomy and intervening before self-neglect becomes dangerous. For example, when do you have a loved one, a senior citizen, elder person, when do you take the car keys away? Or is that even the right language to be using here? When do we discuss this and make plans to make a decision, know when to make a decision, rather than allowing the person to go on putting themselves and others in positions of danger? Those are tricky things, tricky for families, no matter how well caring they are. Well, I bet you find a lot of that very interesting. Maybe some of you find a lot of that new, or maybe you find it as a refresher. And I imagine many of you have more to say about the forms of abuse. Probably many of you have other kinds of observations to make. At least as important and maybe more informative, many of you have stories of your own to tell, or stories of others who hold their stories close to themselves, the silent ones, reluctant for any variety of reasons to share their stories. Elder abuse is one of the dark matters of our communities, and many of us are unwittingly involved, both as victims and unwitting, unaware perpetrators. Both need support. Observations, thoughts, stories, anything to bring abuse to light so the people involved can be freed of the ravages of abuse. All these are essential to talk about, and we have not been doing that very much anywhere in the world. And therefore, several members of the ShoeSwap community from Sycamose and Enderby and Blind Bay and Salmon Arm and Sorrento and more got together last Friday, Friday the 13th, to take the first step toward hearing your voices, listening to your stories, reflecting on your thoughts, and taking action on the problems based on your advice. It all started with a community forum on October the 26th, and now things are afoot, and you can join the journey. Here's briefly what happened on Friday. Immigration Services Shoe Swap made its conference room available, and it filled up with people, some of whom I bet you know, to work out the details of hosting at least 10 different conversations to be held in the various Shoe Swap communities. The volunteer hosts, most of them elders themselves, have accepted the task and the risk of setting up the opportunity for others to talk among themselves about their observations, their experiences, and their demands and their expectations. The hosts will mostly just listen and write down the ideas that surface. Then they will help the next group of volunteers to assemble the necessary information about resources that are presently available to those who need them. And where they find the resources are not available that local elders have expressed the need for, they will communicate that to local, provincial, and federal government offices, and yell and insist until they are available. Well, I hear the voices of the boys coming, and that means I've got to go back out into the storm. So I'm just going to say to you, the community is going to be developing these conversations soon, and I'm going to let you know, and we'll have posters and news items, and it'll be in the papers. But if you're interested in joining a conversation, please write me right now at elderabuseshoeswap@gmail.com. elderabuseshoeswap@gmail.com. Right now, and I'll make sure you are given ample heads up about when and where to go to join in the conversations. Thank you so much for being with me today, and remember, all clothing off, dust down the street down here. It's cold today. I don't think I want to do that. Thank you so much for being with me, and don't forget, elderabuseshoeswap@gmail.com. Bye for now.